Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome to Needle Exchange, where we explore the stories behind the stitches. I'm Jamie Chalmers, aka Mr. X-Stitch, and today I'm interviewing Chloe Savage. In this second half of our conversation, we traced Chloe's creative upbringing through diamond mines, Paris Couture, and the Royal School of Needlework. She unpacks how life detours, from teen motherhood to science teaching, ultimately fueling her practice, and how art became a lifeline through grief. Please note that this episode does briefly touch on the subject of emotional abuse. Another artist who processed personal trauma through her artistic practice is the wonderful machine embroiderer Julie Heaton. We had a needle exchange way back in episodes 25 and 26. Chloe's a fantastic person to talk to, endlessly charismatic, a wonderful geek, and I really enjoyed talking with her. Not only that, she's a truly phenomenal embroiderer, so be sure to follow her on social media. If not, links in the show notes, etc. I'll be back next week with another needle exchange of someone new from the world of Stitch. And if you feel inclined to leave a review of the podcast on your favourite platform, I would be very grateful. But for now, enjoy the show. So are you doing that and conservation work, or were you solely doing that? I feel like
I was doing a bit of both at the time.
Yeah, because presumably there's an ebb and a flow with the fashion seasons and stuff, right?
Yes. And sometimes that you just think, I don't think I can do this season. My sanity won't take it.
I'll stick to this giant tapestry instead.
I will stick to banners or altar frontals or whatever is currently.
Have you got any good conservation stories, any things that really spring out as stuff you've enjoyed?
I love working for the National Trust, partly because we get to go into the rooms that nobody gets to see. We get to go through the boxes that are labelled and hidden.
Where's your best boxes hidden?
Yeah, there's usually some fun stuff. I have learned not to put my hand straight in a box without checking it first.
Okay.
Things crawl in there to die. It's quite fun working in some places because you're in undignified positions, so you can't tip a piece of furniture up to assess it. You have to go under it.
Right.
Which means you're trying to have visitors while you're laser sticking out under this piece of furniture. And you're going, please don't ask me questions.
Yeah.
So it can be quite an interesting situation that you are in the oddest position while trying to do something and someone's trying to have a conversation.
And would you work on projects up and down the country, or were you quite geographically...
We get a bit of everything from everywhere at the moment. We've had some overseas ones as well. It fluctuates. Currently, we've had a lot of children's samplers. That's the current thing that's been through. We've got some church work that's coming in.
And with the children's samplers, are you just repairing them? Just what cleaning, kind of stuff? Right.
Giving them a good clean. Quite often they've been misframed, or they've just been tucked away somewhere and get quite grubby.
Yeah.
Vacuum them. Sometimes we can bath them, depending on the testing that needs to go into checking that they're okay to be bathed.
Yeah.
And getting some of the sort of the dirt out.
So if if you've got someone who's doing a children's sampler now, they've got their child's just made a sampler, they're very proud of it, they'd like their fifth generation family to still be able to enjoy it, what are the pro tips for keeping it in good shape now so that it would last longer?
Good quality conservation glass.
Okay, right.
Light. Light is our biggest problem. It fades threads, it degrades fabrics. It's an absolute nightmare of damage that comes with it. And when you're working with silks, it turns it to like paper. So you touch it and it just goes poof into powder.
Like, yeah, right.
How am I supposed to put this together when I literally can't touch it?
Yeah, okay.
Good framers. A good framer is your friend.
Right.
I work with a very, very good framer. And it might cost me an arm and a leg, but they are. I can ask them any weird question.
Mm-hmm.
And they will go, no, we can work out how to frame that.
So keeping things in like indirect sunlight, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Textile is not a fan of direct sunlight.
Right.
A lot of the conservation work is rebacking curtains. It sounds really weird. But at the National Trust, if you imagine the back of calico or the liner is the thing that gets all the direct sunlight.
Yeah.
And it disintegrates.
Mm.
And we have to take it out and then put in new ones to support and protect the front fabric, which is actually the important piece.
Yeah.
We do a lot of curtain relining.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? But yeah, it makes sense when you say it. Yeah. Are there any particular pieces that have been like really lovely, like when you've restored them, they've really like transformed?
Yeah, we did a set of green silk curtains for Tinsfield.
Right.
And when we looked at them originally, they just looked so scraggy. And such, they'd been sort of tucked away, stuffed in a box. Clearly somebody just taken down because they're not dealing with those.
Mm-hmm.
And they were filthy and really quite damaged.
Mm-hmm.
I think a few things, something had taken to snacking on the bottom.
Okay.
Chitsfield also has a problem with bats, which is an interesting other thing to get out of curtains.
Okay. How do you get bat shit out of curtains?
Well, Chitsfield has its own Batman, who is responsible for the bats in the bat flat.
The bat flat.
I know, it sounds like a bad film, doesn't it?
It does sounds good, yeah. Low budget version.
But if one gets into the main building and leaves presents,
yeah,
that's a joy to get out.
Mm.
And because it had been damaged and somebody hadn't cleaned it, it smelt. And they're now back hanging in one of the main rooms and they look really good because they've got new backings. They look a lot fuller. The colour's back.
Mm.
We've supported tears and damages. You really, unless you got your nose right up against them, you probably couldn't tell they were damaged.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, it must be very satisfying.
It's really nice to watch the visitors come and go, oh, wow, aren't they gorgeous? And you're thinking, you didn't see them 8 weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's the kind of before and after.
That's not the word you would have used.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, holy crap.
You'd have been a bit, ooh, is that a dish rag?
Right, so I think that's nearly brought us back up to present day. So then you get to a point, yeah, and you're like, I'm gonna stretch my artistic wings again now.
Yeah.
So how do, like, yeah, because you, so you've got this skill set, haven't you? Let's be honest, like the work that won second prize in the hand embroidery category of the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize, fantastic. Like, I was going to nerd out because you out-nerd me, I can feel that. I love it when black work gets used in interesting ways. And I love the fact that, like, with some of your pieces, you've used, you know, the different textile, what am I trying to say? Just strength of line work, should we say, you know, different definitions, thinner lines, thicker lines, all those, just those little tricks.
It's actually Morse code. It's got words.
Is it?
It's entirely words.
Is it?
Yeah.
God, you're a dark horse.
What you haven't read is what the words are. So each of those patterns is a word.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So my first marriage was a bit of a disaster.
Right.
He's not a nice human.
Mm-hmm.
My ex-husband, he is mm-hmm. not a nice human.
Okay.
And he is a known abuser and right. he was pretty brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came on my master's, though I dealt with it, I thought I'd dealt with it.
Mm.
And I thought I'd worked a lot out. Yeah, there may have been a few things hanging around that I hadn't dealt with.
Hmm.
And on my master's, we were starting to talk about trying to get emotion in pieces and say things in pieces. And I was sitting down talking to my partner in crime, Carly,
mm-hmm.
who does some really, actually, Carly Pariah, she does some really funky wallpaper.
Okay.
Yeah, twisted stuff. It's great fun. But we were talking about it and she said, well, what about the abuse do people not grasp? And I said, well, people understanding abuse, you get hit. That's fine. And people, you can get over the breaks and the bruises, but what is still bothering you? And I said, it's probably what he said to me, the things he kept saying to me that I probably still haven't actually shifted. And they're the things that can trigger me with other people when they say them.
Right.
And it's the, you're not good enough. You're crap. You're vile. You're ugly. The hitting isn't the first thing that happens. They usually spend a lot of time starting to degrade you.
Yeah.
And making you want to sort of shut in on yourself and not go out. And they want to be able to control you. And that's the first thing they do is use words to control you. So the piece is stitched in the words that was used to control me.
Mm.
Because they're still in my skin.
Mm.
They may never leave me.
Mm.
I've just learned to cope with them.
Mm.
And it's more difficult.
Yeah. And the process then of creating the work and sitting in that, what was that like?
quite cathartic. I was getting some things out of my system.
Yeah.
That I don't think, though people in the family are aware about the physical damage that he did, I'm not sure they're aware of how verbally aggressive he was. And we have a child together, daughter, and that even though after we split, he still had access and still was allowed to continue that behaviour. And she's now an adult, but he has also done that to her.
Right.
Yeah, said he's not a nice human. It's very difficult. But both of us are dealing with things that have been said to us and going, well, actually, that's not us, that's him.
Yeah.
But even as a side comment, someone can trigger us without realising.
Yeah.
And I think we were always taught that things like sticks and stones will break your bones, but words will never hurt you. I found the words have been the harder thing to get over.
Yeah.
They've stuck in a way that the breakages didn't.
You can see the breakages heal, can't you?
Yeah, and I think people are aware that girl with black eye, someone's hit you. But they don't always see the verbal. Because quite often these people are very outgoing in a public space. You wouldn't spot them. It's what happens behind closed doors is the problem.
Yeah. So, I mean, was that work, because of the process that your masters took you on, was that the work that had to be done?
It didn't have to be. I think it's what evolved.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Out of a lot of conversations.
Yeah.
We had to talk about art in different ways, which was quite fun. We had to write about art in different ways. So we had to write it in a form of poetry.
Okay.
Or a scientific report. It's quite weird.
I bet you were all over that one, though, let's face it.
That was fun. That was easy.
300 pages you did.
Poetry is not my thing.
Right, right, right.
But trying to just write in different ways about why we were doing our art. And that's, I think that's where I came into it. I started thinking about what was leading my work. And what did I want to say with my work? And I came across the site Killed Women.
Okay.
Which talks about the women who are murdered every year by their partners in this country. 7 women a month are murdered.
Jeez, in the UK?
Yeah.
Jesus.
And it's not in the headlines.
No.
It's not big across the board. It is just sort of brushed under the carpet and just left.
And is that the sort of stuff that is like domestic abuse that's just gone too far? That is that what we're talking about? Right.
All of the partners had histories of being abusive, and in some cases the women had left but hadn't been protected.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
It's ridiculous. But we started talking about it, and I dug into sort of historical abuse of women. There's a whole joyous experience that I ended up in as sort of a minefield. But the piece I did for the show, the end of year show, was my journey. So from the verbal to the physical, to the loss of self, to how I had to put myself together to leave. Because actually leaving is not easy.
No.
I think on average it takes a woman 7 or 8 attempts before they finally manage to leave.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of getting your head straight to do that.
Did you find that like the research that you did helped you get your head straight or helped you reaffirm the experience you'd gone through?
I think it made me realise it had been going on longer than I thought it had.
Okay.
I think it reaffirmed that a lot of people said, oh, we can't be that bad. And I've sort of brushed it off. And I think I was always beginning to believe it wasn't. But having gone back and going, no, actually it was worse. Anyone who can say that to somebody else, no. That's not nice. That's not appropriate. And I think it also made me look at the situation we were put in through the courts and other things going, again, this isn't right. Why was he still allowed access?
Yeah.
And why didn't it not register to the courts that he was abusive to women and has a daughter that he was not then going to be abusive?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It never registered
until
she got quite mentally unwell.
Yeah.
That he was doing exactly the same process. And it's just like, well, why did we have to be there?
Yeah.
I mean, I know fathers should see their kids, and I'm a big proponent of a lot of fathers seeing their kids, but there are some men who should not.
Yeah, I think it's really hard for me to fathom, you know, because to me, we know it happens. Like, I'm a dad of daughters and I can't fathom it because that's not who I am or whatever. But it feels like, yeah, if you break that cycle for however it comes, isn't it? Yeah.
And it's difficult. And I wanted to sort of say to women, it's not right to live with this. And it sometimes, if you feel a female friend is just getting a little bit locked away or a little bit more shy, maybe it's just worth having that conversation.
Mm.
Because you may be picking up the beginnings of this cycle.
Yeah. And who's to say, yeah, the fact that she's being a bit shy now, that's an outward thing, but that could be many, many months already down the track.
Yeah.
Mm.
If they suddenly stop going out with you or stop accepting invitations or change the way they dress or suddenly things get odd, it may be worth a conversation because something is going on.
Mm.
It might not be the partner, it might be something else, but it's still worth having that conversation.
Yeah, 100%, isn't it? It's just good to check on people regardless. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you did those pieces, and because it follows a journey, do you feel like that's been that the journey that you've gone on, has that come out, you come out of the other side of that with a different perspective, or?
I think I came out knowing I'm a lot tougher than I think I am.
Mm-hmm.
Because just to break away and go, no, you are not ruling my life and you are not dictating what I think and what I eat and how I dress to what I read. No.
Mm.
But I also think even now he still dictates part of my life, in that before we can leave the house, we have to think, what will we do if he turns up though? What will we do if you see him? How will we, where are the exits?
Right.
It sounds really weird. Simple things become a little bit more complicated.
Yeah. It's a necessary risk assessment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you go, why should I have to do a risk assessment when I leave the building?
Mm. Yeah. But I guess that sense of, from the research going, you're not the only person going through this as well.
No.
There must have been something from that as well. Yeah.
It was interesting to talk to other women. And even people who had short-term relationships didn't get as nasty as mine, to go, actually, no, I have been called that and they have called me this. And no, it's not acceptable.
Yeah. The phrase gaslighting is quite popular these days, isn't it? But that's almost like that's the first version of that event, isn't it?
And if you dig back into history, women locked in mental asylums for reading a novel. I mean, come on, you just wanted rid of your wife.
Yeah.
News.
Mm.
What were you doing to her to get her locked up like that? You just read some of the things and you go, you just were a bit of a git, weren't you, to lock your wife up because...
Yeah, and the patriarchy was kind of way more on their side back in the day as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you're just thinking, this has been going on just a little bit of a while.
So you're not being funny. I spend a lot of time saying to my girls, look, men are just dicks. I'm sorry, you know, I'm sorry I'm one of them, but we are just Muppets. Do not believe in us.
There are a few good ones, but they are.
I mean, even then, they're still dicks. Like, you see a six-year-old boy and you think, oh my God, boys are so stupid. And you're like, well, I'm older than him and I'm still the same.
Teenage boys are disgusting. I have teenage boys. No.
I did hear a theory that said that teenagers are generally repellent and it's like a biological imperative that makes it easier for us to let go of them when they then move into independent living and stuff like
that. Oh, God, yes.
You're just glad to see the back of them.
You're just glad to see the back of them after a while. Like, oh, God, you are gross. Can you please leave? No, you do. And then they come back to, when they get into their mid-20s or late 20s, you actually start to like them again.
Yeah.
But they don't live with you.
No, yeah. And then they're quite pleasant and there's quite a good time, yeah.
And as my dad said, best joint thing about grandchildren is you get to hand them back when they're grotty.
Yeah, that's...
It's like, it smells, it's yours.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I just gave them a load of cake. Enjoy!
Oh, the whole point of being a grandparent is to fill them full of sugar and, energy and then hand them back.
Yeah, it's true. And the thing is you hold on to that, don't you, as a parent? You think, right, your time's coming, kids. I'm going to be a grandparent one day. I'm going to mess you up.
I've already informed my children they're going to hate me as I get older. It's not going to be graceful. I will be getting revenge for the tantrums thrown on the middle of John Lewis floors.
Yeah. Oh, God, I'm right in the middle of it at the moment. The scary thing for me is that when Flora turns 18, I'm going to be 60. And I'm like, I'm going to have an 18-year-old and a 16-year-old. And I just hope I've managed to look after myself, because it feels like that's a really old age to be having kids of that age or something. And I'm just like, oh, you know. I've got...
Yeah. No, it's fun.
It is fun. It's the best thing ever. No, you wouldn't, would you? That's the worst thing. It's like a pain that you love. So where's the artistic direction going now, moving forward?
I am continuing to work with black work and, as you can see, I mean, a giant piece of white work. Because clearly I need more suicidal tendencies.
I mean, Jesus Christ, white work as well, though, and keeping it clean and all of that sort of stuff.
And stitching white on work, and this one's quite translucent. Yeah, I have my moments, and then why was this a good idea?
But you're constantly seeking, it's just like the bleeding edge, isn't it? That's what it is.
I want to push the techniques. White work, again, is something that we saw historically a huge amount. But how much do you see now?
Yeah.
And again, we're at risk of losing techniques because it's not being pushed into a modern representation.
So I was having a conversation the other week about lace and the fact that, like, there was an exhibition of some lace work and all they'd really done was do it in different colours, which is not rocket science, but was sufficiently interesting to make it engaging.
You've just reduced Katrina to the giggles.
What?
Because she actually makes bobbin lace.
Okay. But it's one of those things that just becomes a cliche. They do accident, you know, because it doesn't get... And the same with black work. Do you know what I mean? That's what I loved about your work. It's just any forward thinking. And that's what's nice about the stuff you were saying about kits for school children. And that's what I thought was exciting about Hanny talking about stitching on straw, is like, there's this stuff and all it really needs is new thinking. Like, not much new thinking, but just to make it relevant and interesting to someone who is under the age of 45. And then we've got half a chance at sustaining this stuff, right?
I mean, black work has so much mileage as a form of drawing with thread.
Yeah.
In a shading format.
Hmm.
And I don't think it's explored. I think people are too stuck on the Jacobean and the 17th century patterns. And you're like, can we just try pushing the boundaries, please? It doesn't have to be. And again, with white work, you get it a bit on the baby's christening robe. And you're like, yeah, but there's so much more mileage.
Hmm. Yeah,
that could be used as a shading option. And we were having conversations about how do we light white work from the back so you can see the translucency.
Because you did that with your piece, right? There was two versions of it, wasn't it? Yeah. And did you put Braille in that as well? Am I right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's coding those messages. Yeah, honestly, it's just like, this is the thing that I don't get, is there's so much untapped potential. And like, I'm still baffled by just like the middle of the road, the mainstream middle, even just across it, right? Because there is new thinking across it. There's a guy called Robert John Hodge who got was a finalist in last year's Hand and Lock, and he won the Hand Embroidery Prize here. I think he beat you. Sorry. But it was like just forward, I know, but he's awesome. Like, or just forward thinking from a design standpoint, you know, and that's still cross stitch, let alone the other needlework. Like, it doesn't take a lot. Like, there are so many formats that people could become the most well-known of that needlework type on the planet.
Yeah.
You've got to think about it, right?
Niche is really part of the thing. It's going down a quite a serious rabbit hole and becoming the expert in the weirdest form of something possible.
But what gets me with needlework is there's like, what, in the stitch bank, what have they got, over 400 different types of stitch? Just pick one. Noodle around with it for like 5 years and you're bound to come out with something more interesting just through reps.
One of the ladies who specializes in cantha, Akita Cool,
right?
And hers is just literally, it's like a running stitch, but it's called cantha in India, and it's different creating of textures with the same one, and you're like, and it's just running stitch.
Yeah, and it's not hard, is it? It's just, you just put in the reps and allow yourself the freedom to follow the ideas that bubble to the surface, which I guess is probably, that's what your masters would have been pushing you at, right?
That's what the masters allowed me to do. It allowed me to go back to the process of drawing and sketching and going, can I get away with doing this?
Mm.
Somebody behind me going, oh, hell yeah, just go for it.
Yeah. Because there isn't really a wrong answer, is there?
No.
No.
And that I found the Masters more freeing in that sense.
Mm.
Because I wasn't tied to the traditional training.
Yeah.
I could pull on it for stitches, but heck, I didn't have to outline it and I didn't have to stick to the rules of this and that. And it's like, actually, that's more fun. Because when you're taught at the RSN, it's very much, it must be done this way.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were like, well, why?
But then that's where the degree course, I guess, has unlocked that a little bit, hasn't it?
It's made it better. I'm not sure it's got as far as it could.
But have they ever knew, got 3 years to run through the ropes and teach you all the... They've got a certain quality level that has to be achieved, isn't it? So yeah. I guess...
I mean, the point of the RSN is we were all taught so that six people could work on a frame and nobody could tell who stitched what.
Yeah.
Which is a quality thing.
Mm.
But occasionally it's also fun to go, why are we still doing it this way?
Yeah.
There are other ways to do this.
And that's the fun of it all. But I was, it was making me think about Julie Heaton as well, who had a similar thing with her MA studies and how that enabled her to deal with a lot of grief that had gone on as well and kind of process that. And
well, I'm off to do my PhD next, so I've got a place at the RCA.
Wow. Okay.
I got headhunted at my degree show, at my MA show.
Wow. And what's the PhD going to be in? What are you going to be?
Black work and white work and expressing it in new ways.
You heard it here first. I like the sound of that. No, so honestly.
My entire PhD in hand embroidery and I'm going, have I just bitten off 4 years of work?
Bloody love it. You know you do, don't you? That's going to be so good. It's going to be like, because even just that, even just like, because you've got that thing and I've said it to quite a few people from like the RSN, you've got the skills. So now, like, all bets are off, really. You can do whatever you want because the foundations are so sound and you've got the techniques that it's just, you know, how far you as a person are willing to, like, strip yourself apart, I guess. Something like that.
And I found that, weirdly, going back to the kits, that the more I've gone weird in one direction, more people then go, oh, but I want to learn from her.
Mm.
And buy the basic kits. It's really quite weird in a loop.
Yeah, but it's that thing, like, because it's permissive. I remember once seeing, like, in the X Games, which is, like, alternative sports, the first time someone did, like, a 360 backflip on a motorbike, and it had never been done, and then 3 years later, they're all doing it because suddenly permission's been allowed and they've been able to do this thing. It's a bit like that, isn't it?
It's someone that needs to give you permission to just go, let's throw the rules out of the book and see how far we can take this.
Yeah. And then the realization that in order to break the rules, it does suit you quite well to learn the rules in the first place. And so you double back on that and go through it.
I would say it's helpful to know the fact that I can literally just look at a pattern in a museum now and go, oh, that's how that's stitched, because I've got the technical.
Yeah.
But then it's quite fun to go, now, how can I apply that to this?
Mm-hmm.
And then go throw the principle out the window and go, can I now apply it to an umbrella?
Yeah. Or, I know how to build a mine. How can I build one that does talcum powder?
Yeah.
Mm. It all comes full circle.
But I've got an engineering parent, so I was taught to think. Well, actually, not outside the box. I'm not sure we were really sure there was even a box to have a think about. And my children are very similar. I'm not sure they were even aware there's a box.
How are they, any of them particularly needlework inclined?
Not needleworky. My daughter is a painter.
Okay.
She's currently doing her art foundation at the RWA in Bristol.
Right.
My eldest isn't particularly arty. He's about to go into the army.
Okay.
And my youngest is only 13. And yes, he enjoys art, not a sewer, but he does like collecting weird hobbies.
Okay.
He's just taken up the organ.
What size of organ?
Church.
Oh, God.
Well, at least I don't have to sit through practice.
Yeah, I suppose that's a bonus, isn't it? I was going to say, until he turns your porter cabin.
Because clearly picking up the weird and the unusual runs through the family.
Yeah, couldn't he have just got a squeeze bottle? Well, actually, no, you're great. Like you say, he's...
I'm really happy I don't have to this. Yeah. I feel sorry for the sixth form in his school who have the crypt as their sixth form centre and have to deal with organ practice.
Yeah. I mean... When was it? 2019? I did the British Textile Biennial and I did the Stitch Your Story installation, and that was in Burnley Cathedral, I think, when we were hanging all the pieces. And I just remember this, the lady came in to practice the organ, and it was lovely for a while because she was like, and she's quite this serene thing, sunlight coming through the stained glass, we're hanging all these pieces. And then at one point she just got into it and was just like, burr, 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 and all this. And we were just like, oh my God, just like the vibes just being kicked across the floor and stuff.
Yeah, can those installation withstand the organ vibrations?
Yeah, honestly, it was quite the experience. It was amazing, that, right?
Yeah, no, so clearly we've decided that picking up weird hobbies is a family habit.
But it's permissive, isn't it? Like you said, you that's what your parents did. They said there were no wrong answers. I try and do the same with my kids, to be honest. I mean, I told Annie, who's six, I was like, don't get tattoos above the neckline and above the wrist line, please. You know, I'll try and put a few boundaries in. But other than that, I've got tattoos. Can't really counter-argue. You just got to, yeah. I think it's, I don't know, you know the balance, don't you? You teach them the right things, but yeah.
But they have to be who they are, and you have to accept that that's who they are.
Yeah.
If you try and dictate it, they won't talk to you.
Yeah. And by the sounds of it, respectfully, if they've got your DNA in the mix, they're going to go and be some charismatic nerds one way or the other, aren't they?
Oh, they're all happy nerds.
Happy nerds.
No, we've got sci-fi nerd. We've got, well, Max's languages in Latin and ancient Greek. He's sent to test my patience, my youngest. And the middle one is very much into her Lord of the Rings and elven histories.
Can any of them speak like Dothraki yet? Or are they too young? I feel like
No, but we have an elvish.
Okay, there we go. It's good enough, isn't it?
And to be honest, if I threatened her, she'd probably learn dwarf just to annoy me.
Sounds good. That's good. Right, let's go. Let's lean into this a little bit. Let's talk about favourite things of yours, and in that case, and let's just go straight into films. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. Have you got a favourite film?
Well, I've struggled with this a bit because I've got a lot of films.
Yeah, that's fine. Just whatever
and
comes.
I just started thinking, and I came up with three that all more or less link back actually to each other in a slightly weird way. So the first one is Lady Hawk.
Okay.
It's quite obscure.
It's coming back, isn't it? Yeah.
Michelle Pfeiffer, Rutger Hauer, Matthew Broderick.
Yeah, I remember that.
One. Another one that you, again, not really on the mainstream, was The Honest Courtesan.
I know that one.
Catherine McCaufick, Rufus Sewell, based on the life of a courtesan in Veronica Franco.
Okay.
About women. They're both of the films, both relate to women dealing with situations that aren't necessarily ideal and making the best of them.
Okay.
And the last one, which is, again, a slightly odd one, but it's more because I'm getting into a lady of a certain age.
Don't. Me too.
Miss Pettigrew Lives for a Day.
Okay, what's that about?
It's a lady who applies for a job out of desperation, and she's wholly unqualified for it, and actually ends up having one of the best days of her life, and is brought out of her world of being sort of trapped in a job she hates and with people she doesn't understand, and finding that she can exist.
Okay.
And it all happens within a day.
Oh, who stars in that?
Frances McDormand and Kieran Hines.
Is it like quite a modern film?
It's based on a 40s, 30s film at the beginning of the outbreak of World War II.
Okay.
But they'd lived through World War I, where people had been lost and things had not turned out the way you'd expected your life.
Does it make you cry?
It can do, yeah.
Yeah. Are you crying?
But also you come out feeling a little bit warm and huggy.
Yeah, no, like Ted Lasso-ish. I'm well up for that sort of thing now.
No, they're really quite obscure.
No, I like those. I like those. I've written two of those down. I seem to remember Lady Hawk back in the day.
I'm thinking, yeah, it's just, it's where she's a hawk during the day and he...
It's become a wolf and knife or something.
Yeah, they literally can't be in the same space.
Yeah.
And it's how they manage a relationship with not being in the same space and only... Oopsies.
What I'm getting flashbacks to is almost like the advert for that being in like some of the Marvel comics I might have read back in the
day. Yeah, probably.
Like that. Yeah, definitely.
It's a slightly obscure one.
Yeah.
I think it's very underrated.
I like that. That's good. Okay. So films. Let's go books. I've got another hour to spare. Let's go books. Oh,
now, again, this was a challenge because I realised that having sat down and worked out what my audiobook subscription got through like this year so far. I'm already on 272.
Whoa. Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, you're not going to get time to read physical books, are you? But you must, yeah, you blitz.
So I was trying to think, what do I recur back to?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm really absolutely dire, what will I re-listen to or reread?
Mm.
And there are three. The Pride and Prejudice.
Okay.
Because, yeah, it's just a warm and fuzzy.
Mm-hmm.
Jane Eyre, again, okay. Warm and fuzzy. Mm-hmm. But the classics.
Yeah.
And a slightly odd one, which is Wild Swans.
Okay. Tell me about that.
It's written by... It was written when I was about 18. And it was written by a lady called Zhong Chang. And it's about three generation of women surviving the Cultural Revolution in China.
Okay.
And it's quite interesting. As she's just released her... second book with the finishing of the story.
Okay, that's quite a wait, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I don't think this is digging through her family history and seeing how the rest of life has developed since the first book.
Okay.
Talking about her feelings about her grandmother and her mother and her father who was killed during the Cultural Revolution.
Right.
But it's quite an interesting read from a mother whose grandmother whose feet were bound so she'd be beautiful.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That was a weird thing, wasn't it, that particular...
Sort of how they survived where being educated was almost a sin during the Cultural Revolution.
Thank God that sort of thing doesn't happen in the modern world. Moving on. So you listen to books while you're working a lot?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that preferable to music?
To be honest, I listen to music, but then my children tell me my taste stinks.
Okay. I'll part of that. We'll come back to stinky taste.
Joys of my children telling me that I'm out of date and my taste stinks. No, we just find it. I find it's an easy way to get through. I mean, I'm a prolific reader anyway. My father was a prolific reader.
Mm. And do you chop a route? Like, do certain book genres fit certain types of stitching? Does it not really matter? You'll just listen to any of them?
I've just finished one on the possible. It sounds like back to the mining, weirdly. What rocks of the future will look like.
Okay, what will rocks of the future look like?
I think about the microplastics and the things that we're throwing away and how these are going to create new types of rock. Yeah.
Is it quite depressing? Because that sounds like...
No, it's quite interesting. It's not depressing necessarily.
Okay.
It's quite interesting in a how is the technology and the science going to affect what the planet looks like in 2,000 years when these things materialize into rock formations.
Yeah. I mean, if the sun heats up, will all the plastics just melt and it'll be quite a gloopy planet?
Well, they'll form a form of rock. They will degrade into some form of solid.
Yeah.
But it's how that's going to affect and look.
Hmm. This is a sidebar, but in the building that we've been doing, keep having fun discovering things made of asbestos. Because by Christ, they made it. We've got toilets that have been painted with paint that's got asbestos in it, which just then makes them loads more annoying to get rid of.
When we bought the house, we had battery chicken head and sheds that were lined with asbestos.
I feel like some people made a lot of money out of asbestos, and I understand why it's like an amazing material that unfortunately will kill you if you breathe too much of it. But yeah. It's the same with plastic. Yeah, you just think that we're plastic somewhere down the line. We're just going to be like,
well, that's been quite an interesting read. Now I just chop and change genres.
And go fiction or non-fiction and backwards and forwards.
Yeah, we've done The Dressmakers of Auschwitz, but then we've... got through a lot of sort of tween fiction, partly because I need to keep up on what the other children are reading.
Mm-hmm.
Just mm-hmm. So I've got a vague idea.
Do you listen to them at normal speed or do you not speed up at all?
I can do both.
Mm.
I try to listen to it at normal speed because it's not fair on other people.
Yeah, my wife's like, I listen to the rest of the entertainment podcast like 1.3% or whatever. My wife's like, why are you doing that for? That sounds horrible.
ADHD superpowers.
Yeah. I can dig it.
And I used to do my degree listening in the car, commuting from one place to the other, driving the children.
Okay.
So almost prescribed master's reading was listened to in the car.
Excellent. Your children have got that in their subconsciouses somehow.
It is good for them, but it's also because it's the only place I was ever going to catch on.
Yeah, I can see it. That makes a lot of sense. I'm quite looking forward to it. I've got a long journey tomorrow because I'm going down to Ali Pali. And I was like, I could get some good listening done. But as it happens, I've got to write a charity application, which is not that exciting.
I hate applications.
Yeah, 5 hours on the train.
It's torturous.
Mm. Right, so apparently you've got rubbish taste in music. How does that pan out? Have you got a favourite band or a favourite album?
I think we came down... it's a bit eclectic. It's a bit of, well, I like that song, but I don't like the rest of the album. Mm-hmm. But I think we came down to one that we all agree on, that it's the one that is not just a formation of my life, but it's also very much in... embedded into my children.
Mm-hmm, as it should be.
Which is My Chemical Romance, Black Parade.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. God bless your children. I thought he was going to be something happy-go-lucky for a minute there. Yeah.
Oh, God, no.
My God. Yeah.
We're a bit eclectic.
Yeah, and you and I, we know we're similar ages now. The thing was, I was like Guns N' Roses and all those sorts of things. And then by the time that kind of stuff came out, I think I'd moved almost weirdly into like acid jazz. Because that was like, what, late 90s, early 200s, 2000s? Yeah. Yeah. Whereas my wife, she's all over that stuff. Anything that's like, it's kind of emo-y, kind of, yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah. And then I had the kids. Mm. So I had teens.
Yeah. Yeah, so it all matches up quite nicely, doesn't it? Yeah.
I think the other one is I'm a Teenage Dirtbag. It's one of those songs that my children will still rock to because they are literally at that stage.
Yeah. And then one day they might find a bit of Radiohead in the mix or something and it will take
off. I mean, I grew up with the Beatles because Dad was born in Liverpool and he went to school with them.
Okay.
Yeah, but my grandmother was a classical pianist, so we all play piano to grade 8. Whether we want to or not.
So your fingers really can do a lot of different things.
I think that's purely the fact that we were just, it was inflicted.
I look back and I wish I'd stuck with piano lessons because my dad plays the piano, my kid brother plays the piano, but just wasn't.
I don't think we were given a choice. She used to come and be our accompanying, we all play two instruments. She used to come to our accompanying, all our music exams and be the person who accompanied us.
Okay. So what was your other instrument?
Trumpet.
Oh.
My brother is the French horn. Tom is the trumpet.
Between us, we can stand brass outside. Band. We can do a Christmas carol concert in a heartbeat, my family.
The family have a brass band going.
Yeah, right. Yeah, with the most beautiful embroidered costumes you ever did see. Do you listen to podcasts? Are you a podcast listener?
I'm currently working my way through Haptic and Hue.
Okay, yep. Shout out to them. Probably need to do some kind of podcast twinning with them at some point or something.
Like yeah. That. Not really ended into podcasting particularly, though I have had a load of lessons at Emerge Studio on how to do them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I obviously needle exchange. That's what you're supposed to say. That's fine. And then is there an interest? I know there's going to be an answer here and it's going to be amazing. Is there an interesting fact that not a lot of people know about Chloe Savage?
You want a really good one? I'm actually completely blind in my right eye.
What? What? That doesn't make a lot of sense. So everything you do has no depth perception about it, more or less.
Well, I've always been blind. I was diagnosed with it at about 18 months. They're not sure when I stopped processing.
God damn. So you've done all that with one eye.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Sorry.
How do you, like, because it's weird, because, yeah, you don't know any difference, so you don't really necessarily know what depth perception is like, or do you, or how do you...
I've sort of mastered it, otherwise I'd fall over things a lot.
Yeah, right, yeah, but not fall off the ground, as we were talking about earlier. But, yeah, because with me, sometimes a washing line can be a bit imperceptible, but, yeah.
Well, I mean, the only thing I really don't do is play balls games like tennis or badminton, because everyone uses my blind side.
Right. Which side is your blind side?
My right.
Okay.
So I'm right. Now, it's weird. I'm left-eyed, right-handed, right-footed. And normally run it all down one side.
Yeah. And
I have to cross.
And have you got slightly heightened hearing? Do you get any other superpowers? Is your sense of touch greater than the average?
I probably touch is probably more enhanced because of what I do as well.
That's incredible. See, so, like, because that eye... I don't know if it has to work harder than the average or not, but I mean, you've spent so much of your time doing do you use a magnifier?
Yes. Mostly because I insist on working on 64 count linen.
Yeah, in white on white, probably under candlelight just to maintain a tradition or something daft.
No, I've got a nice LED. I've got a very posh LED.
Yes. Shout out to Daylight Company. Is that a Daylight one or not?
Yeah. You know the routine. I've got a decent magnifier. Katrina's got one too, because purely we need the light and sometimes we're working on really tiny stuff.
Like, I think if anybody's not got a magnifying light, then it's not a sign of weakness, is it? It's just a very clever idea because it makes life so much easier. It's
saving your sanity.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. God, and you've only got... I want to, though, just for fun, ask if there's another interest, in fact, that not a lot of people know about you, because I feel like there probably is. Have you ever killed a person? Are you a ninja?
No, but I do have a forensic degree, so I know how to bury the body.
There you go. Got any pro tips?
Yeah, my first degree is physics. My second's forensics. My third is in... Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I am a complete overachiever. When I had my children, I did a sociology degree, and then I've now got an MA.
Yeah.
I'm just a teeny bit of an overachiever.
Can you write a book? I think you owe it to us. Yeah, I think you should. I think you should. It doesn't have to be in like Blackwork Morse code. It can be in like normal text, like normal things if you want. But it sounds like, even if it's just like random facts, like I feel like you could be one of those people that could write an almanac.
The other particularly stupid one is I did win a competition with Patrick Stewart when dressed as a squashed hedgehog.
I knew it was worth picking it. I knew it was worth picking it.
I do apologise that I do have some slightly bizarre tendencies.
No, that's been wonderful. I think I'm just going to say it now. I'm just going to say, Chloe, thank you for having a needle exchange with me. That's been an absolute blast.
Thanks, James.